Welcome to this Youngevity shareholder call. During this call, we will be making forward-looking statements regarding Youngevity's current expectations and projections about future events. Generally, the forward-looking statements can be identified by terminology such as may, should, expects, anticipates, intends, plans, believes, estimates, and similar expressions. These statements are based on current beliefs, expectations, and assumptions, and are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those set forth in Youngevity's filings with the SEC, many of which are difficult to predict. No forward-looking statements can be guaranteed, and actual results may differ materially from such statements. The information on this call is provided only as of the date of this call, and Youngevity undertakes no obligation to update any forward-looking statements contained on this conference call on the account of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as required by law. I now turn this call over to our CEO, Mr. Steve Wallach.
Thank you, Alex. I want to welcome everyone to the Youngevity International shareholders call this morning. Speakers on the call today are myself and our President and CFO of Youngevity, Dave Brisky, and the President of Chrysos Industries, Dr. Dwayne Dundorf. As you know, we acquired Chrysos in February of Q1 of this year. It's now our third reporting segment, which we will title as our Commercial Hemp Enterprise. On this call, we will cover the following topics. We will highlight the 2019 Q2 results. We will discuss the business model and the progress we have made in our Commercial Hemp Enterprise this morning. We will provide a brief update on our direct selling space and segment. We will wrap up with the coffee segment as well, and we will also provide some guidance. What I'd like to do right now is bring our President and CFO, Dave Brisky, onto the call. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Steve. Thank you so much. Let's dig right into it. I appreciate everyone that's on the call, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen in. Just so you know, the call will be recorded, and it will be posted up on our YGYI.com investor site for replay. We usually leave it up at least for a couple of quarters, so the call will be recorded and posted there. I want to start off with some balance sheet highlights. Cash and cash equivalents were $2,088,000 at the end of June 30th, 2019. I'm going to do all these comparisons on the balance sheet versus the end of last year, 2018. As of December 31, 2018, we had about just under $2.9 million on the balance sheet and finished June at $2,088,000. Total assets were up significantly, $136,524,000 of assets as of June 30th versus just under $76 million of assets as of year-end 2018. That's an 80% increase in assets. Our total liabilities went from $52 million or $53 million as of 2018 end to June 30th, $86 million, so a 62% increase in the liability side of the business, which of course bodes well for stockholders' equity. Stockholder equity at June 30th, 2019 was $50.5 million versus $22.9 million as of December 31, 2018. That's a 120% increase in stockholders' equity as of Q2 versus last year. The results for Q2 revenues for the second quarter was up 21.2% to $53.7 million. This compares to $44.3 million for the quarter ended June 30th of last year. We derived approximately 60% of our revenue from the direct selling space, and 40% came from the commercial coffee segment. The direct selling segment revenue had decreased about 12.8% to $32.1 million in this quarter as compared to $36.8 million for the quarter ended June 30th. This decrease was attributable to a decrease of the number of ordering distributors and customers, and it was partially offset by an increase in the average order per distributor and customer, which is an initiative that we embarked on at the beginning of Q1 to raise the average order and start leveraging the multitude of products offered through Youngevity. We're happy to see that that number is starting to move in a direction that is showing some favorable results. Our commercial coffee segment revenues increased by 186.5% to $21.2 million in the current quarter, and this compares to $7.4 million for the quarter ended June 30th of 2018. The increase was primarily attributable to increase in revenues from our new green coffee contract that was executed last year and is bearing fruit now. We also, the commercial hemp segment that Steve alluded to that we acquired in February just started to produce revenue in Q2. It was $274,000 in revenue, and obviously we have plans for growth of Chrysos as we move through the year. You're going to hear more about that from Dr. Dwayne Dundor later in the call. Gross profit for second quarter ended June 30th, 2019, increased 2% to $25.9. This compares to $25.4 million for the second quarter a year ago. Gross profit in the direct selling segment decreased 11.6% to $22.2 million as compared to $25.1 for the second quarter ended June 30, 18. As a result of the decrease in revenues is the reason for the decrease in, obviously, the GP. Gross profit in commercial coffee segment increased to $3,731,000 in the current quarter, and this was compared to just $295,000 for the quarter a year ago. The primary increase for these revenues, as discussed earlier, came from the green coffee distribution business, which is growing nicely. Gross margin in the commercial hemp segment was a loss of $49,000 related to the acquisition of Chrysos, which closed on February 15, 2019. Overall, gross profit as a percentage of revenues decreased to 48.3% in the current quarter compared to 57.4% in the same period last year. And this was primarily due to the increase in revenues in the commercial coffee segment, which generally had produced lower margins than the direct selling segment. Operating expenses increased 3.3% to $25.5 million as compared to $24.7 million for the 3 months ended June 30th, 18. Distributor compensation paid to our independent distributors in the direct selling segment decreased commensurate essentially with the sales at 12.1%. Total sales and marketing expenses decreased 9.4% to just under $2.8 million for the 3 month ending June 30th from $3,076,000 for the same period last year. For the 3 months ending June 30th, 2019, total G&A expense increased 59.7% to $8,251,000 from $5,166,000 for the 3 months ended June 30th, 18. In the direct selling segment, general and admin expenses increased by 38.8% to $6,071,000 in the current quarter from $4,375,000 for the same period last year. This increase was primarily due to increase in accounting, computer expenses, and some non-cash and equity-based compensation expense. In addition, the contingent liability reevaluation adjustment in the current quarter was reduction in expense of about $433,000 compared to a reduction a year ago of $1,246,000 for that same period. In our commercial coffee segment, general and admin costs increased by $557,000, or around 70.4%, to $1,348,000 in the current quarter, compared to $791,000 in the same period last year. This primarily was due to an increase in wages, warehouse storage costs, and profit-sharing expense compared to a profit-shared benefit on the same period last year. General and admin expenses was $832,000 in the commercial hemp segment, mostly related to wages, supplies, and general office costs and setup costs. Other expenses for the second quarter ended June 30 decreased by $696,000 to $661,000 as compared to other expenses of $1,357,000 for the three-month period ended June 30th, 18. Net interest expense decreased by $487,000 for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2019 to $1,062,000 compared to $1,549,000 for the 3 month ending June 30, 18. The change in fair value of derivative liabilities decreased by $209,000 for the 3 months ended June 30th as compared to $401,000 in other income, compared to $192,000 for the 3 months of June 30th, 2018. We did have an income tax benefit for the second quarter ended June 30th was about $226,000 as compared to an income tax benefit of $90,000 for the second quarter ended June 30, 18. The net loss for the second quarter ended June 30th was $47,000 as compared to a net loss of $614,000 for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2018. EBITDA, which we define as earnings before interest, income taxes, depreciation, and amortization, as adjusted to remove the effect of equity-based comp, expenses, and change in fair value of warrant derivatives, or adjusted EBITDA, increased 18.2% to $2,604,000 for the quarter ended June 30th, and this compares to just around $2.2 million in the same period last year. I'm getting a lot of questions and a lot of interest, and people are very intrigued about this new operating segment. And so what I want to do is we're going to shift into a discussion about what's going on at Chrysos. And it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Dwayne Dundor on the call. It'll be the first time you will be hearing from Dwayne, but I assure you it won't be the last. So, Dwayne, are you available to speak?
Yes, I am. I want to thank everybody for letting me speak to everybody about Chrysos Division. To tell you a little bit about myself, I actually hold a PhD in thermodynamics, which is an electrical engineering degree. I actually have built a lot of equipment in the past for General Atomics, SAIC, DARPA, just name a few companies. So we'll start talking kind of about Chrysos and how we got started with that. So a few years ago, we actually also have INX Labs, which is a division of Chrysos, which we went and started to look at the cannabis space. So the cannabis space started here in Florida a couple of years ago. I had some customers that knew that I built supercritical equipment and asked me to look at what was out on the market. So we kind of looked at what was on the market and realized that a lot of the stuff was coming from other industries brought into it from food or nutraceuticals and things, and it really wasn't designed for cannabis itself. So we started to look into it. We designed a supercritical CO2 system, which basically how it works is it takes CO2, turns it into a solvent, extracts the oil from the plant, which the oil contains the CBDs and, in some cases in cannabis, THC as well. The machine doesn't really care which one they actually pulls out. So from there, we kind of went on and we sold equipment. Then about 2 years ago, we realized that we had to actually expand even more. So we actually started to get into pre-processing equipment, post-processing equipment, because, again, a lot of the equipment wasn't really designed for cannabis. It was designed for other things brought into it. So we kind of went into those things, and we started to build things like winterization, rotary evaporators, distillation equipment. And then what ended up happening was we realized that over time, it ended up going where customers, when we sold them the post-processing equipment, really didn't work. The equipment worked, but they didn't actually understand how to use it. To get things like THC out of the product or even refined CBD products into other things like water-soluble products or distillates is a more scientific approach. So you can't just do it with an operator that you're training to do something. All of our equipment that we designed, except for distillation, is all automated. So the operator really just has to put the product in, you know, set his parameters, hit start, and it tells him when it's done. If it's all automated, so it sends a message out when it starts, when it finishes. If it's a problem, it sends it to us. So we also get those as well, and we can monitor those systems anywhere in the world, wherever a system's at. So that is where we came into Youngevity. So what happened was is we realized that to do this, we actually had to get into the post-processing portion of the business. So we started to look at how the post-processing comes into play. So a lot of people couldn't really do the post-processing because it normally requires PhDs or chemists or things like that. And the post-processing, a lot of times when we talk about it, is in the majority of cases are where we have to pull the fats and lipids out. We have to refine the product to make it more sellable. We may have to take things like pesticides out or herbicides out. We may have to take the THC out of the product to make an end product to be able to sell. So, and again, farmers that got into it really couldn't get to that portion. So what we decided to do was to basically kind of follow the same program that Youngevity does with the coffee division, where it's is basically feed or field to finish, where you're making it in for from hemp products to make CBD derived products. So how that works is basically what we've done is we've looked at the farmer. So we go back to the farmer and we say we would take his product, we'd bring it in. And one of the things that we also saw in the industry here recently is that a lot of times we have to compete with other extraction companies. This is becoming a big problem in the industry because if I'm an extractor, I have to compete. So when, you know, CBDs are harvested or the hemp's harvested in October, November, prices are down. You know, come June, July, prices are three times the price of the product just for the same product that we're buying, the oil that we're getting. So we tried to make it so we actually have a much better, broader, let's say, playing field. So what we've done is we go to certain farmers. Normally they're farmers that are on their second or third crop because the beginner farmers always end up having trouble with, but in the ones that actually have been doing it for a couple of years now in certain states, we've been trying to divide them up between the East Coast, Central United States, and West Coast. And what we do is we work out joint venture deals with them, so we don't actually have to do the farming. The farmer does all that. We provide extraction equipment at their sites. They actually come in, they'll use the equipment, the oil comes to us, we pre-process or post-process it, and we would turn it into sellable items. We may turn it into bulk items that are sold to other wholesalers. This is where the industry is kind of moving. One of the things that actually happens in the industry right now is that if you look at just even some of the, look at one of the largest drink manufacturers, they actually sell 1.6 billion cans of soda every day. Well, it's no really good places, for companies to actually buy large quantities of stuff. And there are some things where some people need 100 or 1,000 kilos a week or 10,000 kilos a week of water-soluble isolate. But if you have all these smaller locations doing it, we normally have to come up where we're trying to get it. So now we can consolidate this. So that kind of gets us into the facility that we actually are taking over, which you actually see a press release this week on, which we just took over a GMP pharmaceutical plant, which is 82,000 square feet. This actually has come into play because of some of the issues we've been having with power, getting enough stuff for our equipment to get it operational. But this actually now it boosts us up a few years, and which Dave will talk about a little later on. But so what it's done now is we can actually go in, we can set it up. Our capacity with the equipment we have existing, we should be able to do about 8,000 kilos of product in, about 4,000 kilos out. And people always ask me about why that's like that. It's because normally when we get product that comes in from the farmers, after it's winterized, it's going to be about 40 to 50%, maybe a little greater. We're going to take it to 80% in most cases to be able to sell to other manufacturers. And when we do that, we actually takes 2 kilos to make 1 kilo going out. So with the new facility and the equipment that we have, we can be able to process about 8,000 kilos in, about 4,000 kilos out. We also are adding packaging and bottling as well, so we can actually do some white labeling. We also are putting in a line that's just going to be for basically tolling. Tolling is where we get other manufacturers or other farmers that want their product run. They may want, let's say, the THC taken out, and we would be able to do that for them. We could take the THC out of the plant or pesticides, and then we would, or maybe just take it up in potency, give it back to them, and normally we get, in that case, about $1,000 a kilo in most cases to be able to do that. So we have a couple different revenue streams. We also haven't forgot our roots of being able to build equipment. We just did a trade show in California, and we got right around 500 leads for equipment out of that show itself. To kind of give you an idea of how it was in the past, like last year we did the same show, we got about 100 leads. This year we got, you know, over 500 leads. I mean, it was an incredible show for us. And we're planning on doing another one in Las Vegas in, I think, in November. I think that's pretty much it, Dave. Okay. Hopefully I covered everything.
No, you're good, and I'll wrap it up. I think we're going to now bring Steve onto the call to talk about the direct selling segment. But before we do that, Dwayne, before you bounce off, when do you expect this new 82,000 square foot facility? I know we started moving in our equipment this week. When do you expect it to be at full capacity?
We actually are hoping to have. We're actually going to be moving some of the equipment. We actually started already this week to move equipment in. So we're hoping to be at full capacity, which is the 8,000, by the end of the year. We probably will be at partial capacity by, sometime by the end of August. We have been, because we do have that contract, a contract that's we're starting to fulfill actually tomorrow. Or Friday, sorry, which is, I think that's a $19 million contract, which we're going to start fulfilling. So we had already made product ahead of time, so when we take the equipment down, we won't lose any of that production time. So we should be up, like I said, to start making that here by the end of August. We'll be back online with everything. And then, but by the end of the year, we should be at full capacity. That capacity is actually the same capacity we would have been at. It would have taken us, if we weren't moving into this facility, it would have taken us about 3 years to get to that same capacity. So I think this is a huge benefit for us. The facility also is a GMP facility. So we would be actually the second GMP facility in the hemp space, in the United States, that are just hemp derived products. It's one in Colorado, and we would be the only one on the East Coast. So that is GMP facility. So I look forward to that, and I'm sure we're going to tell you more about that as we go over the next couple months.
Absolutely. Okay, Steve, can you give us an update on the direct selling segment?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave, and thank you, Dwayne, for that update as well. You know, Dave, you and I have watched and participated, obviously, in the expansion and growth and coming up to capacity and full capacity of the coffee facility at CLR in Miami, facilities in Nicaragua, and certainly the facilities here in Chula Vista. So it'll be exciting to see Crisos do that same thing with this new exciting facility. So thank you. Okay, so on to the direct selling division within Youngevity. You know, on the last call, we advised that we had taken somewhat of a pause on acquisitions and our acquisition strategy, and we've really been focusing more on international for probably the last, certainly for the last year plus, and so we haven't really done acquisitions within that time frame until recently. So we've begun really focusing on growth through acquisition again, and in looking back at the growth of Youngevity, a lot of the growth has certainly been at least in part because of the acquisition and our acquisition model, which is one of the things that the direct selling division within Youngevity is known for. And so we feel this pause has kind of had a negative effect on growth, and so that's why we have turned our attention back to the acquisition strategy, and we've talked about overlaying some of the international infrastructure that we've been focused on building also with our acquisition strategy, and we've been doing that also, especially in the last quarter or so, and we definitely have a lot of conversations underway currently. So the acquisition pipeline, acquisitions have been quite effective, the acquisition pipeline is definitely ramping back up. And one of the biggest benefits of our acquisition model that we've developed within Youngevity is that it's a non-dilutive acquisition style and non-dilutive manner, I guess is the best way to describe it. And so it definitely has worked out well for Youngevity in the past, and certainly we believe it will continue to. You know, one of the best aspects that Youngevity attributes or derives from our acquisition model, I guess, is that not only is it non-dilutive, but we get great products, great people, great leaders, as well as around the world. And one of the things that I'll talk about today is that we've brought on two small acquisitions recently that you guys probably haven't heard about. One is a company called Welling Company, which is in the U.S., and has been really a developer of some unique and fantastic products, and I believe this ties into the conversation that Dave and Dwayne were just having as well, for instance, around hemp-derived products. The key products associated with Welling Company are another delivery system for nutrients and raw whole foods in particular, and that is a chewable. So it's a chewable nutrition, and if you can imagine like a now and later piece of candy, although this is not candy, this is whole raw foods put into a chewable piece of food, really. And so it may seem like a piece of candy, which is great from a compliance standpoint of the person consuming it. And Dave talked about increasing our average order and certainly the average order per customer and per distributor. This is one of the ways that we do it, is by bringing on additional great products that people want to use every day in their lives. And so this company is called Welling Company. And then also one of the developers and formulators of this unique proprietary delivery method of raw whole foods and nutrients is Dr. James Rouse. Dr. James, I've known Dr. James for about 10 years now. He's a great, really thought leader within the dietary supplement, whole food, raw foods movement within the wellness space. And so Dr. Rouse actually attributes his turning towards natural healing and natural wellness methods, leaving traditional medical school because of hearing my father's lecture quite a while ago, obviously, and he wound up going to the same naturopathic school in Portland, Oregon that my father attended, graduated from, and wound up teaching at as well. And so Dr. James has already made a huge positive impact within Youngevity as such a huge heart. He fits right in with the distributor demographic and distributor base within Youngevity, which is known for having just this huge heart and willingness to just teach people about health and wellness and really educate the world around that. And so Dr. James is a great addition. He'll be speaking at our upcoming convention, and everybody that meets him is just excited to hear more. So that's one of the exciting aspects of our acquisition model, in particular, is the people that wind up coming to Youngevity. Another company that we've done something with similar very recently is called Taiwan Vinegar, and this happens to be in Taiwan, as you would imagine. And so this overlays really perfectly with our Taiwan infrastructure, which is, again, one of the aspects that we've talked about in recent past on these calls. And then in addition to Taiwan Vinegar, and another exciting thing that is just developing, is we're now bringing hemp-derived products to Japan. And so this is something that we've been working through approval process and regulatory aspects and product development. And so this is just happening now, and so we're extremely excited about that. We also anticipate announcing additional acquisitions in Q3, which obviously we're in. And so we've been in talks with various companies and people and things, and so these two that I just mentioned, there will be additional ones, we believe, in this quarter that we'll talk about later, obviously, and you'll hear and see the press releases as these things develop further. So we expect to bring to market In addition, I just mentioned the hemp products around Japan, but also here in the U.S., this chewable nutrition. We're excited that we're working with Dr. James on additional hemp-based products, but also in association with Chrysos, we're looking at bringing on, and we anticipate bringing on, core tincture products, for instance, and then also through Chrysos, we've talked about on these calls, Dr. Dundor's incredible help around bringing on hemp-derived coffee through CLR. And so we anticipate bringing hemp-derived coffee into Youngevity, the direct selling space, also the retail space, sometime at the end of Q3 into Q4. And so that's exciting as well. Something else that we've been working on is lessening our dependency on the U.S. market around directs in the direct selling division. And we've talked about that on these calls, and we've talked about the infrastructure that we've developed over the past couple of years internationally, and we've talked about it even on this call. And so in lessening our dependency on the U.S. market, it doesn't mean that we don't intend to continue to grow the U.S. market, but we intend to grow the rest of the world also and at a faster rate because it represents such a huge opportunity. And so this has been a priority. In 2017, 91% of our direct selling revenue was derived from the U.S., and just 9% was international. And it has been that way for quite a while. Youngevity, the direct selling division, is now going on 22 years old, and is 22 years old. And so that had been relatively constant until recently. In 2018, 84% of our U.S. sales have been derived through the U.S. and 16% internationally. In 2019, in Q1, we derived almost 17% from international markets, and in Q2, we derived just about 18% from international markets. And we still are targeting, by the end of this year, about 20% of our direct selling revenue will be coming from these international markets. So a lot going on around the direct selling division as well. And so what I'd like to do now, though, is bring Dave back on to talk about the coffee segment.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. And, you know, one point on Dr. Rouse, I had a good conversation with him this week, and he is he really is somewhat of an expert in the hemp-based products and the whole cannabinoid system, and a strong believer. So we've been really looking for someone to kind of lead this, the marketing of not only Hemp FX but other products that we're working on. And he has an unbelievable sales track record, both direct as an influencer, big building blocks in QVC and so forth. And one of the products that he's really latched onto is our Hemp FX line, the promotion of it, and then the creation of other products leveraging our capabilities, our newly acquired capabilities at Chrysos, so that we can ultimately really begin to leverage that end-to-end processing and then actually the production of products at Wayne Touchdown himself. Obviously, the coffee business had another really strong quarter. We're pleased to see its growth. Green coffee was a big part of it. Green coffee year over year was up 60%, 18 versus 19 is what I'm comparing. So it was a 60% increase, almost $13.5 million. So very, very significant. But we have experienced growth in other parts of the business. Everyone knows that we're very focused on our brick pack business with our own brands, that being Cafe La Rica and newly acquired espresso brand called Cafe Cachita. Our strategy there was to have kind of a lower price leader in Cafe Cachita come in, that would be a promotional brand, to help drive the sales of Cafe La Rica, so we didn't have to be discounting what we consider our premium brand. And this strategy worked, you know, very nice for a company called Bustelo, Pilon and Bustelo, which was acquired by Smucker's about 4 or 5 years ago. And so being able to employ a strategy that we know works is now already starting to pay dividends. And we really just acquired Cafe Cachita this year, so in 2019. And already we're seeing our brick pack unit sales up over 10% year over year, and we expect that to continue to accelerate. We're also getting movement on our K-Cup business. It was up 5%, and we have newly acquired a four-corner bagging machine. This four-corner bagger is really focused on what's going on in a trend in retail right now, and already bringing that piece of equipment up and running. We were running behind on production. We were adding a second shift on our other four-corner equipment, and adding this piece of equipment will really drive that business, and it is up 8% year over year as well. So we're seeing growth across the enterprise as it relates to coffee. And then our food service business, we just added a strong leader. We put a press release out on food service. We still believe that is a major growth driver. We just became the official cafecito of the city of Hialeah. And that is 28 locations, essentially all coffee drank by all government employees in that city. It will be drinking one of our brands, either Cafe La Rica or Josie's Java House. We've installed not only American coffee brewers, but K-Cup equipment, as well as espresso machines. So that should bode well for the continued growth of our food service business. You know, Dwayne, I want to bring a couple points home to Dwayne, and some of you picked up on this, I'm sure, but I want to make some of this clear. We one of the things that has been a huge challenge for everyone that's in the hemp-derived business in terms of both extraction and, most importantly, post-processing, is the amount of power that is used to drive this type of industrial equipment. We have definitely been challenged in our facilities that we've created, which was kind of a modular building structure to get up to speed very, very quickly. We already had the equipment, so we felt like we had the hard part done. We had certain challenges at the various cities from a permitting standpoint and getting all of this power to drive this business and scale it. And so if you remember on the last call, what our plan was is we, and it was partially because of these power issues, is we were going to put three post-processing facilities in our overall strategy. We were thinking Vegas, Florida, and up in the Northeast. And we were doing that because at our current facilities, we just didn't really have the capabilities from a power standpoint to actually manage it that way. But as we were really refining our business model, and as you know, sometimes in business, as you're marketing to various customers, opportunities come up. And a opportunity came up for this GMP facility that was a single-use facility, literally has clean rooms, more power than we would know what to do with it. And having this access to this particular facility got us really thinking of, wow, this would be an opportunity where we could actually, there's enough power, it's already there in the building. This was that type of building and that type of use that we could change our strategy. And rather than having all the CapEx to invest in three facilities and then have to manage three facilities and have management in three facilities, we actually was able to acquire a building, if you will, and I say acquire, lease a building that could do the work of those three buildings at without all of the CapEx that we'd have to invest into the strategy that we were going to employ. In terms of shipping the oil, that isn't it was never the issue. So now we can bring the oil into one centralized processing facility that's GMP and will be GMP certified that allows us to do the work of what three facilities would do. And this is how we dovetailed our strategy. Now, it did put us behind a little bit in terms of the short term. So, in other words, in terms of Q3 and Q4's capability, it put us behind. But we were definitely struggling with the power. So by leasing this facility, which this lease has been signed, we're literally moving in as we speak. I'm speaking to you from our coffee operations here in Florida. And right after this call, I'm heading up to our division up at Chrysos and in looking at the whole strategy of this facility. So in the short term, yes, we don't accelerate our revenue as anticipated in Q3 and Q4 as fast as what we were hoping to do. However, and Dwayne alluded to this, in terms of getting up to speed, we will be up to speed by the end of this year, going into 2020 at a capacity that's much, much larger than we would have expected to be able to do in 2020 regardless. So we have now leapfrogged our plans in terms of the capabilities moving into 2020 and 2021, and we're only utilizing two-thirds of this building. So Dwayne alluded to 4,000 kilos of output. In other words, just so you're clear on that, 8,000 kilos of crude or hemp, right, coming in, that 8,000 kilos of raw oil that we would produce from the farmers of oil can convert to 4,000 of sellable products. At current prices, at that level of production, you're talking about the ability beyond $100 million, now closer to $200 million of annual revenue possibility, which really we didn't have mapped out until 2021 or 22. And we also can scale from there. So we took a kind of a short-term scenario. So our model that we were expecting to be in revenue at this point shifts about 4 months, but the capability literally triples as we move into 2020. So we think that was a really smart move in the short term. It's resolved all of our power issues, and it also is a very, very impressive operation. And we're bringing it up to speed as we go. Many of you may say, well, what is that going to do to your guidance? Well, based on the performance of the coffee business, the re-ramp up our acquisitions strategy, and the reality that Crisos will definitely be delivering revenue in Q3 and Q4, just not as high a level, we still feel like $200 million as a target revenue is very much in reach in 2019, and then much higher scale as Dwayne mentioned, as we go ahead and leave 2019, we should be up to the full capacity of putting out 4,000 kilos. That's on a monthly basis, by the way, entering in 2020. And, of course, in this facility, we have room to grow either by increasing the capacity of our equipment or just putting in our other equipment, obviously, that we already own. So that's how we're going to be changing the guidance. A little bit of a short-term scenario that we've now resolved and we're very, very bullish on, but it provides us an opportunity now to really, really accelerate this business. We are seeing demand at such a high level, and we wanted to be able to capture this demand on a quicker basis and to be able to service this market at a much larger scale. And so this opportunity that will fully PR along with some other contracts, probably this week and early next, that will help you more fully understand what we're doing, how we're doing it, and why this is a very, very big opportunity for our hemp enterprise for not only the end of this year, but more importantly, over the next 2 and 3 years, and, of course, largest growth coming in 2020. With that, I can open up the call to questions. You can, if you want to ask a question, you can simply hit *2 to raise your hand, and I should be able to bring you on to the call. Bill Sutherland from Benchmark, are you there? Bill, are you there? Okay, I don't hear Bill. Press *7, Bill, to talk.
Hey, Dave.
How you doing, Bill?
Good. So I was talking about coffee for a second. You know, you've spoken about how the harvest is earlier and given what's happened with pricing. So can you help us understand, at least on the green coffee side, where that, you know, how that kind of moves the revenues around quarterly? And then perhaps a little bit on just the margin implications for your packed coffee and food service at these low commodity prices.
Yeah, let's take them in reverse order. First of all, the margin implication obviously is you know, at our cost of goods, you know, we've got in kind of an inflation-proof model as it is, because we, you know, for that division, we can go at the cost of grow. But food service margins are the highest of any product we put out. It's in excess of 50% margins, as is our retail Cafe La Rica product. So it bodes really well. It'll be in excess of 50% margins as those business grow. And it does have a nice impact on the numbers, because at our operation, you know, we're starting to get closer and closer to higher capacities, and that allows us to drop more dollars to the bottom line. In terms of the green coffee business, very interesting. It's really shifting. So the harvests are coming in early. So, and initially when we were planning our modeling, we expected Q1, Q2 to pretty much do what it did. We're very, very pleased and happy about the way that came to be. It certainly drove profitability into the coffee segment, which we anticipated. But we expected it to continue in the Q3 and then go to essentially to fall off in Q4. And really, it's going to flip around now. We're going to see Q1 and Q2 be very strong. Q3 will be not a lot of green coffee business, but it will, not being there in Q4, it will start in Q4. So the down quarter for green coffee will now shift to Q3, where it used to be Q4. So it's just a flip around in the business. It really doesn't affect the overall revenue for the year. And of course, if you're tracking the sale of the commodity, most experts feel like there will be a rise in that commodity's prices, which, you know, on our green coffee segment bodes well for revenue growth. We are planning 2020, 15 to 20% of additional capacity. So we're hoping for 15 to 20% growth on top of 219 for the coffee sector.
Now, I know you have capacity expansion plans in coffee. You've got the joint venture you just announced for Chrysos with the GMP plant, and obviously started doing acquisitions again in direct selling, although I realize there's not much up front on those. So can you talk a little bit about your capital demands and allocation plans?
Yeah, so fortunately we've got some really great shareholders that have been with us a long time. And we've had, we've been very, very cautious about not selling equities here at this price. We've had early warrant exercises that have come in. We've got others that are coming in. And so we've been able to bootstrap it, if you will, bringing in, just the last week, I believe we brought in another $2.8 million of capital that essentially went to the Chrysos division. And, you know, our plans to with multiple sites and going to centralized processing and a lease facility really, really took a lot of stress off the capital needs of Chrysos, given that we own this equipment and build this equipment, and it allowed us to kind of accelerate our model. And so we're in some conversations, and we believe we can put the capital together that we need to realize the expansion in a relatively non-dilutive, if not small dilution basis, as well as ultimately over the next 60 days bringing on a senior secured lender that is, you know, very, very intrigued by the activities going on, in particular in the hemp enterprise.
Okay. And just so we understand the trajectory for Chrysos, you would be in the process of getting to full capacity in the course of 4Q. And is it kind of like a fairly ratable sort of process, or is it going to be a step function? You're just going to flip the switch and
I think Dwayne made it clear. We have an $11 million contract that was to begin in June. Based on these power issues, we were trying to run it off a second shift, and some of these challenges, we were able to shift that to start shipping in August. And we through this kind of second shift scenario, we built up enough isolate to start shipping that contract here Friday, I think is what Dwayne said. So we'll begin shipping that particular contract starting on Friday. We've accumulated enough of that material through this pause on this contract to allow us to take that equipment and move it into the new facility, which we're literally doing as we speak, and bring that facility up and running within a couple of weeks, which catches that contract and then allows us to execute a second contract. So it really pushes off our revenue ramp up probably around 4 months, Bill, is kind of the timing of that. But it accelerates the back end of it, like we said, it puts us ahead of schedule by 2 years. So it was a small price to pay and just a very unsure scenario. And anytime you're trying to grow a business and entering contracts and you've got an uncertain scenario as it relates to power and capacity, you know, that's not a position we wanted to be in. So this is a very, very big opportunity for the division.
No, makes a lot of sense, and good luck with the move. I'll get back in queue. Thanks.
Okay. Any other calls? I see a 917 area code. You can hit *7 and come on to the call.
Hi, Dave. It's Tony Fitzgerald.
Hi, Tony. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Just for my own edification and perhaps the others on the call, that the type of ASP that you're getting for your isolates, you feel like you're getting market price for that? Or do
yes,
you have
well,
a special price because of the contract and the already committed capacity?
Yeah, we have our contract has a price built into it, and it's definitely in market range. We are shifting a lot of our contracts to the demand on water soluble, so water soluble has a much higher margin. So we are seeing a growing demand there, which was why it was necessary to move quickly into this GMP facility, with the additional processing capacity to take advantage of those stronger margins. But yeah, we're definitely able to move at market. Dwayne, I think, made it pretty clear. You know, we're at the point in the model, and I'm not sure everybody grasped that this is a challenge plaguing this industry that's growing so quickly. And what I'm speaking of is you've got a scenario that when you reach the end of a harvest, right, new hemp is not coming up out of the ground till the end of September, October. So we get this when new hemp's available, we see kind of a price compression happening because simply there's more supply. But as you near the end of the season, then you've got this scenario of higher and higher prices. So our model pretty much gives us a smooth capability of providing good margin and good pricing across the platform 12 months out of the year.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we're going to go ahead and close out the call. I appreciate everyone's time. You can always write us at our IR site or dbriskey@ygyi.com if you have any questions, and we'll get those questions answered. Thank you so much for being on the call today.